On this episode of Narcissist Apocalypse, we talk with an abuse survivor named Ethan. And Ethan was in a toxic relationship with an emotional vampire. It's a story of isolation, the fog, triangulation, infidelity, and invisible illnesses. Welcome to Narcissist Apocalypse, everyone. I am Brandon Chadwick, and today's episode is with someone named Ethan, a survivor named Ethan. And this episode was in our bonus episodes. It was recorded in early 2020. And I never cleaned it up, and it's been cleaned up as much as possible the last 20 minutes of this episode. There are sound issues, but it's not that bad. Hopefully you can make it through. But it's a really interesting episode. It is textbook in a lot of ways. The person that Ethan was dealing with was really a true con artist in a way. He was being used. He didn't know it. And everything here is really kind of clear cut. There's not really a subtlety. There's just a lot of stuff kind of going on behind the scenes. So like a really big thank you to Ethan for being our guest at that time and for everything. And if you want to be a guest like Ethan was on our show or is today on our show, well, please do go to narcissistapocalypse.com. Top of the page, there's the button that says guest form. When you click on that button, it takes you to our guest form page, read all the instructions, and send us an email at narcissistapocalypse@gmail.com. Or please do just fill out our form right there and press the submit button. So again, a big thanks to Ethan. And sometimes I had to put myself in this episode to make proper segue, so there might be a tiny bit of a sound difference in some spots and some of the original sound as well. So my apologies for that. I just thought this was really interesting for everyone to hear, and I finally got around to cleaning this up as it should have been done 2 years ago. So my apologies to everyone and Ethan. So now, without further ado, and I'm going to say it anyway like this, even though he's not here right now, Ethan, the floor is now yours.
Okay. Well, I probably like set the stage a little because like
the prologue.
The prologue, right. Like just some understanding like what was going on with me. So it's like, you know, like how things took root. This all started to occur not too long after I had like a really challenging like experience with a coworker. They had like, which could be a story all in its own, but it's like, but in short, like I had to like get HR involved with this person because they were like, their behavior was unacceptable. And so they were taken off the same schedule as me. They weren't allowed to be in the building when I was, and it was pretty bad. So it was like a really stressful period, and I got pretty depressed. I think like, I don't know, I like receded a lot and just like focused on my work. So I think they were like spreading rumors about me and stuff, but to be honest, like I wasn't really, I was trying not to talk to anybody or get involved with anything at all because it was so like the whole situation was pretty intimidating. But I ended up switching to a brand new team to get away from that mess at the new team at the same company. And was like starting to like rebuild and get into the flow of things. Because of all this, in part, like, because I'm working at a company in a city I'd never like lived in before, so I didn't have any close friends or family who lived, you know, in the same state even. So, and because of the whole event I had with the coworker, I just wasn't feeling comfortable even making friends to begin with. So I was like, you know, my hobbies and interests are really independent. So like I illustrate much of the time, and I just work on that. So it's not a, like, go out on the town kind of like thing or go places and do stuff with other people. But like, not, that's kind of how my life's going at the time when this all begins.
So it is safe to say that Ethan has low self-esteem or lower self-esteem and is a bit of an introvert. So with him and work being a big thing, eventually he does meet the person that this story is about at his place of work.
I don't know who they were at all. I don't even think I knew their name at this point. They were a brand new hire onto my team, and they may have only been working on the team for like a few weeks, maybe 3 or 4 weeks. But I didn't know what was going on, who they were, what was going on with them at all, because I was just sticking to my own work. But like, it all started like one day. It's like I take my lunch break in my cubicle at work, and so she just like she comes up to my cubicle and asks if she can like sit in my cube during lunch, because this workplace you can bring your dog to work, so I brought like my small dog, and so she just wanted to sit. She asked to, you know, like she told me she needed a quiet place to sit, and you know, could she just like pet my dog during lunch? And I'm like, well, that's fine, you know. And on my lunches, I just practice my illustration anyhow to sort of decompress. And so, you know, we hardly talked at all, and she would just sit there quietly. And after a few days of that, she had me join her on Google Hangouts, where we'd chat during the workday. So we're like starting to become like friends, like getting to know each other. But then she would also message me all the time after work too. So we're having chats just all the time, basically. And like nothing seemed off about it at all. We were just building a nice like friendship, I guess. And like because of the emotional state I was in, like all the attention was really great. You know, like I didn't really have a, you know, local friend at the time. And so it was nice to be like building a friendship. But after a couple weeks of that, she like asked if I wanted to hang out like outside of work, you know, in like a non-romantic kind of way. Cause like the way she put it, like she had just gotten out of a bad relationship, and she has a tendency to make bad choices when that happens. So she felt like, you know, I was a really nice person and she could trust me. And so like if she like spent her time hanging out with me, then she could avoid making bad choices. And she actually had a term for it called like platonic friend dating, which was didn't seem like it like you needed to describe it that way at all, because it like it was just like a normal friendship, like at least from my point of view it was. Like nothing was going on that you wouldn't normally do with a friend you hang out with after work or something like that. So I don't know why she like used the term dating or needed to emphasize it was platonic or anything. But you know, it was nice to like, I don't know, be friends with a new person and like have, you know, someone that felt they could trust me and I could like help them out some kind of way. So she started coming over to my place after work every day and to basically wait out the traffic, because in this area the traffic was super severe. And like we'd watch, you know, movies, and she'd go home late when the traffic was definitely dead. So, but I mean, that had probably only gone on for like a week or two. And then things got more like touchy-feely. So she wanted to do things like snuggle or do stuff like that while we watched movies, but still like maintain the whole thing that it was platonic. And like she said she was like gay, and so she had no romantic or sexual interest in men at all, and not in me either. So like I didn't see any problem with it, except that it was kind of like odd. But I don't have a problem with people, you know. So
at this point, you feel you're being appreciated, which is something right. You're foreign to, and mm-hmm. You're feeling like you're helping her, and it's making you feel important as well, I assume.
Oh, yeah. Like, it just, like, it felt nice. Like, I felt like I was making, like, a really good friend, really, mm-hmm. for the most part. And, And since that was something I was lacking in my life at the time, like it just like everything about it seemed great. Right. But it didn't go on like that for very long, you know, like, cause within a couple months of hanging out with her, like she escalated it. So it went from, you know, this whole platonic thing, just being close friends, to now it's a romantic thing. And she's definitely like pushing like a romantic interest on me. And you know, and she stressed it as really amazing because, you know, she's gay, and so she's never been attracted to men before, but she's attracted to me, and she really like made it sound like, you know, an amazing thing. And like I didn't have any intention on like starting a romantic relationship with her.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
So right here, a lot of trust is being built. At first, there's a little bit of victim playing, which kind of gets you feeling for her. She's gone from being in the office to being in your home to cuddling to now wanting a relationship. Changing sexual orientation is now thrown on the table. Probably sees you as a safe person, or that's how it is kind of being thrown your way. It's like you're a different kind of guy in that sense, kind of building you up, but also building the trust that you feel that you're trustworthy, and that has to play a lot into it. And it's a really interesting because eventually this person becomes untrustworthy, but the trust that they're creating is quite the like a swerve in a sense of that's how you believe the relationship has begun, on this formation of trust. And that's what you're going to see for a very long time, or at least within your head, that it will be hard to see things other than trust going forward. Or when you start to see things, like gaslighting eventually could happen, but you'll always maybe hark back to these moments. So I think that's kind of an interesting build here of what's going on as far as the manipulation and how it begins.
I didn't have any kind of pressure at first to like engage in a romantic relationship or do any kind of normal dating behavior, right? Or, you know, stuff like that. So, but then that flipped it. And so now suddenly like it's like it made it a lot more special, just because like now I can like, you know, I can build something more with somebody I've already gotten to know a lot. And like, there wasn't really any pressure at all, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, she was really, really playing it up, right? So to definitely make it seem like this amazing thing. And I would like definitely put on a pedestal for sure. Like, because she would like compare me to, you know, like normal guys or whatever this, then, you know, how much different I am than anybody else. And, you know, basically just making me out to be this like wonderful and rare thing. So she put a lot of effort into making me feel as special as possible for sure. And like, and we were like hanging out, like, cause we're together at work, we're together after work, we're chatting all the time if we're not together. So it's like, I'm getting just 24/7 attention from her. And that just really made it so it's impossible to think about anything else really. Like, because like she's basically, it's almost, it's like the, because she's always around, like that's always guiding my train of thought. It's always on her and on nothing else, and not considering this situation or even necessarily like, I can't really critically think about how I feel about it because it's just constantly moving forward. So, and then because things move so quickly, it was also like, even if something happened where I was a little bit, you know, had a little bit of reservation from it, like there, I didn't really have a time to come to a conclusion on anything because it just keeps keeps moving forward. So now there's something new happening. We're going to go do this or that, or, you know, so after sort of being involved with her for a while, like, even when things you would call red flags started happening, I basically just sort of ignored it because I didn't want it to sort of interrupt like the good thing. So like, I think the first thing that was really off-putting to me, like, was her road rage. So, you know, I'm riding in the car with her as a passenger, and she just started like yelling at pedestrians or other drivers for like reasons that didn't seem to warrant it at all. At least not from my perspective. Like, they would just be walking across the street at their normal pace, and it would just infuriate her, you know? You know, I actually brought it up to her. It's like, this makes me really uncomfortable, you know, when you do this. But, you know, she would just downplay it, and she'd be like, well, I'm a very safe driver. Like, and she was. Ultimately, you could drive her, describe her driving as, you know, she's a defensive driver, and it is fairly safe. But the yelling at strangers and stuff is, like, really off-putting and caused a lot of anxiety. And I definitely noticed that, like, I would be... like it caused, it's almost like starting around then, like I was always had anxiety when I was in a car and I wasn't driving it myself, but normally I'd be totally fine being a passenger in a car. But like after like riding around in her car, basically all the time, and she would drive all the time. Like I was like developing I just started to like not like being in cars. I wasn't like putting it together either. Like I wasn't like saying like, oh my God, this anxiety is being caused by her road rage. I didn't actually piece that together. That might have been kind of a, you know, it's like a denial thing, or I thought like, well, it's not something I like, but it's not a reason to like stop things, right? Like, or end the friendship or whatever.
Yeah, like she has some quirks. I can if this is the worst, I can deal with it.
Right, exactly. And so I just, you know, just went along. And things were, like, mostly good for a while like that until, like, all of a sudden she was getting kicked out of her house. So she rented a room in a house from someone, and she was getting in, like, basically shouting matches with that person, like, for whatever reason, but just having arguments with them all the time. Their like her relationship with the person she was renting from just deteriorated very rapidly. Like, it seemed like they were very like they liked each other a lot when I was like first hanging out with them, but then like really quickly it deteriorated, and then they're yelling at each other, and so now she's getting kicked out, and she's like talking about how like it's like she's getting kicked out too soon. I think she only had like less than 30 days to find a new place. And like, so she's talking about like, she's going to end up homeless. And so to prevent that, I just like offered her a place she could just stay at my house. And we made an agreement between like me and my roommates. She would just stay there for up to 3 months while she finds a new place. But she ended up overstaying those 3 months, and it kind of like seemed like she wasn't looking for a new place, and so that was causing a lot of tension with my roommates.
Was she paying rent?
She was paying a portion of the rent. So it was me and two roommates. So with her, she was paying a fourth, but you know the other roommates didn't want four people in the house, so there's like it's causing tension. And then one of the roommates, I think, confronted her about something that he didn't like, and she got really angry about it and just like turned him into public enemy number one, basically. Because like ultimately it's because she can't take criticism, but I didn't like know how systemic that problem was at this point, because it's like the first manifestation of that. And then what made it, then she got sick. So I think if she hadn't have gotten sick, she probably would have gotten kicked out of my house, or my roommates would have kicked her out. But she ended up getting sick, like really, really sick, with a lot of pain. So she got like an ovarian cyst, and which is like really intense pain. And so she couldn't work. And I ended up paying. And she was also, she couldn't work. She was also struggling to get on the work leave or medical leave. So she wasn't getting any payments for that yet. So I was like, but I volunteered to cover like her expenses because it wasn't too bad for me to like pay her for full share of rent and the bills and things. And so, so while she was going through that, I was doing that. And I actually like offered to cover like all of her expenses. And I thought I was doing that, but after she was done with surgery and in recovery, like it became kind of clear that like she had expenses she wasn't like telling me about because she decided she had no choice. She had to go get a second job, which I didn't understand because all of like everything she needed should have been covered and she should have been getting like her back pay from medical leave. But she had to go get a second job. So she goes out and gets one. And then like was upset at me because she said that like I refused to help her even though she was so sick. And I forced her into a situation where she had to work while being sick, which didn't make sense in every way. Cause I offered to pay for everything she needed and she could have just gone back to work, right? Her normal job. Although she wasn't supposed to, cause she was supposed to be through like 2 weeks of recovery or something after the surgery. But it's like, if she truly was forced into a position where she needed work, she could have just gone back to her normal job, not needed to get a second job. And she could have just told me what she needed, but I guess she couldn't. Like whatever it was, whatever secret expenses she would desperately had to pay, she couldn't tell me what it was. So that's like, that was the first like really challenging situation I had with her that just didn't all add up for me. But by this time she's got like living with me and she's like kind of like stuck there. And I guess I was still in a frame of mind where it's like, well, this could all be related to her just being like sick and she was in a lot of pain for a while. And like, it's very stressful. So this could be a thing where it's like, once she's better, once she's healthy again, she'll probably be in a better frame of mind and maybe, you know, it's not going to be like this. So I wasn't about to like end things there or anything like that. But, and ultimately, like, because of how things got started, I was, you know, a good friend of hers and I did trust her. So yeah, that's essentially the first act of this whole story. Yeah.
So I guess at this point is where devaluing begins, more boundary testing begins, and a lot of manipulation starts happening, and problems really start to become a big part of your story at this point.
Exactly. And a lot of that got started because of all the tension she caused with the roommates, caused them to move out. So she's like getting healthier, but she still has this like grudge match against one of my roommates. And she's, I didn't know it, but, cause I trust her, but so she was like saying a lot of bad things about him and characterizing him in a very bad way. But really she was like, these were lies that I hadn't detected at the time. So, but she's kind of characterized him as this unstable individual and he's got to go and he's going to like, we don't know. He's, you know, unstable. We don't know what he's going to do.
So the person that moved into the home, your ex-girlfriend who was supposed to only stay for 3 months,
all
of a sudden has the other people leaving the home.
Right. Because she's causing like a lot of drama with them. And so like that, so now suddenly like my roommates are essentially kind of, especially this one roommate is living in a hostile place, essentially. Like she's made it a hostile place for him because of how she's characterizing him and turning everyone against him. And like, I'm like compl- complicit in that because I didn't understand what was happening, you know? So I'm going along with her, like the fictions she's pushing. And so he ends up pressured out. Like he decides like he's got to go and he makes arrangements and he moves out, you know? And then my other roommate at the time, like I'm still in touch with them, but like this is a difficult situation for him too. And like basically he kind of, he was much wiser than I was. So he kind of saw, he was starting to see through who she was and what she was doing. But he wasn't comfortable talking to me because he didn't know how that was going to go down if he kind of confronted me about his, like what he thought. But he knew he had to get out of there and distance himself from her. So he made plans and moved out, you know, a month or two later. I forget how the timing of it, but you know, that puts me in a situation where it's just her and I were sharing the house and it's just us. So there, now there's no like external tensions or anything. Like, so, you know, things should even out and get nice again. That was kind of my mindset of it. So I was kind of relieved. Plus it's, you know, I now have, you know, these extra rooms of the house to work with. So before it was kind of like I had to have all my stuff in my room, but now I kind of have like the bedroom plus a extra whole computer room. And it just seemed like the situation's getting really, you know, much nicer.
An introvert's dream space with no one there.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, I got a room to myself to just work quietly or do whatever I want to do. But, you know, but that's also like once they're gone and it was just us, that's when things started to like turn, you know, ugly essentially. Cause, you know, I would say it's probably because she didn't have to act in a certain way around others who are, you know, there all the time. But, she always did this thing that I kind of shrugged off a bit, but she like kind of claimed to have a lot of invisible illnesses. So it'd be stuff like misophonia, which is like a sensitivity to certain sounds that can, it's like intensely irritating. And like OCD and stuff like this. And over time, well, up until this point, like she said, she would say she had these things, but it never affected us in any way, or like nothing I did like seemed to like trigger anything, or so everything seemed fine. So I thought it was strange that she would claim to have this stuff, but it was never a problem. So I kind of forgot about it. But all of a sudden, like so, right after we started living just the two of us, like all of a sudden, all of these things start to play, like have a role. So it's like I have now every little, you know, I have to eat more carefully all of a sudden because like the smallest scrape on a plate, you know, will set her off. Or the biggest, like most standout type of thing she did was like one day we were like in the kitchen after work and she opens the silverware drawer and just like loses it, like claiming that the silverware is like disorganized and it's all out of place and it's unacceptable and it's the millionth time it happened. And she's like yelling and screaming this stuff and like just stomping around and then complaining about everything loudly and slamming doors. And it was like, it was scary, you know, it's essentially an adult temper tantrum. But she hadn't touched anything in the drawer. So I like look in the drawer because I want to know like what I did wrong. Right. Cause it's like, I don't know, I could like, if I did something wrong, I can fix it and it cannot happen again. But like nothing was out of place in the drawer. So it really seemed like she was just making it up. And I actually like, and that's also not how OCD works at all. That's more like the, I don't know what to say, like a pop culture understanding of OCD, like disorganized stuff like irritates you and sets you off. But that's not what OCD actually is. It's more of like a, I don't know, it's hard to describe, but it's very different than that. Mm-hmm. But I was naive to these things. So I didn't know that what she was claiming was OCD wasn't OCD at all. she plants the seeds, like she has these invisible illnesses, and she then leverages that as a way to like take total control, right? Because like at that point, since I'm always having to work around this stuff, like I'm walking on eggshells, like, and I'm always like, the only thing on my mind is like how to like how to not have that happen again. I always have to be like, I have to be very careful about every sound I make. I have to be very careful about how, you know, everything's put in a room, because if she claims that something was put away in a different spot, that could be, you know, a trigger for her. And then I have to deal with that. And it's like my perspective at the time is almost like, it's, well, I want to be understanding and compassionate to like her needs. So if she truly has misophonia and OCD and other things, then that's something that I can do my best to accommodate, you know? So at least that was, I was attempting to do, but it was at the same time causing a great deal of anxiety and like, yeah, very difficult to deal with. And she would come up with like spontaneous crises regularly. Like I would say every week or two, there'd be some kind of like problem she needed me to fix, big problem. So it would usually be like a car problem or some kind of problem with a bill or just like something where if it didn't get taken care of, it would be a disaster. When she would do this, she wouldn't be at home. She wouldn't be present. It would only be by text whenever the stuff would happen, or when she would talk to me about it. And she'd be claiming to have like a panic attack or acting like she was in a panic attack. And, you know, I want to be like understanding and work through the problem and, you know, help calm her down and stuff. So I'd like ask her to like, you know, call me or I'll call you. Like, 'cause if we speak, you know, it's better to talk about these things. We can't be in person to talk about it over the phone because it's just better communication. So the rare instances where we're not together, like that's when these things would happen. So like I didn't have too many friends before we met, but by this time, like the friends I did have, like I wasn't spending time with them at all. So I kind of drifted apart from them because, you know, she's either like, we're always doing, it's just always me and her, and 100% of my time is occupied by that. So now I've drifted apart from everybody else I know because I like was never able to make time for activities with them or anything else. And so yeah, I didn't even realize it at the time, but essentially she was like my only friend really, you know, cause even my roommates who I had good relationships with before have, yeah, like they don't really want to talk to me either because I was complicit in, you know, bad situation for them. So like that, and it wouldn't be until much later, until like after the relationship, before I was able to repair those relationships. So, but yeah, at this time it's just one-on-one me and her, and I don't have anything else.
And was she talking to other people that you knew or saying things about you?
Yeah. So, I found out about that much later, but essentially like even at work, she would talk to people about how, cause I was like just a quiet stick to myself kind of guy. But she would tell people that it was because I didn't like them. So, but that's not true at all. Like people can come up and talk to me about anything they want at any time. I won't be the initiator. Right. But I didn't hate anybody, but that's what she would tell people. She'd be like, how come Ethan doesn't want to like do this or that activities? And she would just tell them like, oh, it's because he doesn't like you, you know? So even at work, like, even though I'm not a very social person at work, it was isolating me even at work, even more than I already was. And because if I did start to like talk to people at work more, they've already had that seed planted in their head that, you know, I don't actually like them. So they're just going to think I'm pretending or something. I don't know. But yeah, I definitely had no one to really talk to. Cause also like, even like, I don't know, I've had like lifelong friends, but, since they're so distant, I can only communicate with them on the internet, but she would even talk to them, without me knowing, And she wasn't able to like ruin those friendships, but she made them feel unwelcome, I would say. Like I had a friend who I would play games with occasionally, like on the weekends or something. And she actually was like, I think in a chat, she saw that he had made like a joking remark, like, you know, I didn't have, because I was dating her, I didn't have time for him anymore. Just poking at, fun at me. And she actually like sort of attacked him for that. And so made him feel uncomfortable saying anything negative for fear that, like, you know, she was gonna, you know, come after him, you know, if she found out. Oh, and then the devaluing, like, with the, and it really sort of came with the mini crises and, or, you know, the regular crises and things like that, is it's just like, she's, if, you know, if I can't solve the problem exactly the way she wants me to, then it's like, it's unacceptable. And it's sort of like evidence of problems I have, because I can't, you know, I can't see things the way, like I can't, she makes it seem like I'm incapable of solving problems, right? Or really, like, my suggestions are probably the more rational, you know, responsible way to go about it. Like, instead of dropping a whole bunch of money on this now, I might suggest, like, well, you know, if you're having car problems, it's better to like not spend every spare dollar we have fixing the car now. You can take the bus for a little while and we can save so that we're not, you know, spending our entire paychecks on this. And, you know, it'll only take a month and then we'll get the car fixed and back to normal or something. But she that would be completely unacceptable to her, and it'd be like evidence that I'm not thinking clearly, or I can't see what plainly has to be done and stuff like that. And, you know, and well, that's more of a gaslighting thing, really, but it still makes you feel like you're not incapable, you know. Well, it makes you like question yourself constantly. And it also makes you feel like guilty, because it's just like, you're not able to, like, it makes you feel like if you can't solve problems, you can't contribute to the things that need to be done, that it looks like there's something wrong with you, and you're not, like, you get, like, this is very, like, confusing situation, especially when what you feel like is a logical approach is being shot down in such an extreme way. And then you're kind of, because of that, you're kind of forced to go, oh, or I was kind of just forced in a position where I have to just accept the way she wants to go about it.
So at this point, you're being devalued.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel good about yourself. Do you think you're going crazy a little at this point? Like, what's going on in your brain?
I don't know. I don't think at this point I was totally thinking that I was going crazy, but I was definitely losing my confidence. Like, I would normally have fairly good confidence in, like, I lived on my own for a while, so when problems happened, like, I would solve them myself, and it would always worked out fairly well, and I never had any issues. So, but now it seemed like I'm constantly being confronted where it's like, that's like, my approaches to anything aren't valid, and that was causing me to lose confidence, and then pretty much everything I would think. So, but I don't think I was like, felt like I was going crazy just yet. Like, but it was gonna, is it did eventually build up into that, you know.
What happened for that to happen?
Things like began to really escalate and become extremely chaotic, in that, especially when she invited someone to move in with us. So she wanted to rent with the room downstairs to a friend of hers from Facebook, an online only friend, someone she'd never met before, but had known for a while on Facebook. They were good friends on Facebook. And that person was going to move to our city and needed a place to live. So she wanted to rent the room with them. And I was like, well, that sounds fine. And I checked them out on Facebook. And they seemed like a good enough person. So I was okay with that, you know. We could be helping them out. But then, like, after the the move is planned and it's basically already in progress. They're so like they're on the way essentially driving to our date and city. Like I kind of get confronted with this idea that the person who's moving in, my ex, like she wanted that to become basically like a platonic kind of polyamorous kind of relationship. So nothing physical, but they're going to be like, they're really, really close friends. And so it's like a non-physical sort of polyamorous partnership kind of deal.
What does that even mean? What does that even mean?
I don't know. It's really, it didn't make any sense.
What does that even mean?
And like, it's too late for me to like reject that idea or question it or be like, I can't say, well, I need to think about that because they're literally, they've already moved out of where they lived and they're on the way. Like they're going to be there in a day or two. So I can't, like, there's nothing I can do about this idea she's dropped on me.
Do you know what polyamorous friends is called, in my opinion?
Cheating.
No. Friends. You're just all friends.
Just friends, right. Yeah, just clicked. Yeah. No, it's just like her whole platonic friend dating thing where it's like, I don't know why you need to describe it like that. You're just describing a regular friendship. And so it's kind of like the same way. Like she's like saying all this stuff and using all these words, but it's like, it just sounds like a really close friendship, you know, where you're friends who hug, you know?
But also a polyamorous friends does sound like cheating.
It's like, and that's what's so strange about the way she describes it. Almost like, I essentially like, I want to cheat on you, but it's going to be, it's okay or something. Like,
but we're just friends.
But we're just friends, so it's not. And I'm not using that word. I'm using other words that
she's confusing. Well, she's using words like a word, she's using words to dance around without lying, possibly, to just confuse you or just to make you not even think about what's really going on.
And then what's really insane is the person who moved in, I'm pretty sure they didn't know about that idea of hers either. Or if they did, they had no intention of really, like, they probably understood, like, how I wanted to understand it, where just, like, a close friendship. But they definitely were not on the same page as her. And so almost very shortly after that person moved in, like within a week, things started to go downhill, and they're always in some kind of passive aggressive conflict with one another. Cause when this person moved in, they started dating people, like, or looking for people to date and have relationships with almost right away, which I think really angered my ex. Because it totally went against her kind of weird plan that this person who moved in just wasn't, on board with, essentially. But knowing what I do now about the both of them, I think I'm pretty sure they were manipulating each other, though I didn't really understand what I was very naive to things like manipulation and, at the time, so I never even considered that kind of stuff was going on. But they were very much like kind of in like a quiet conflict or passive aggressive conflict. They were always like, they'd borrow money from each other and not pay it back. They'd get angry at each other about this and that. And I think I was kind of becoming a scapegoat for both of them because I have to constantly deal with both of them daily. And I didn't like this person after all anyway, because they would tell stories about like their job and like what was going on at their work. And all I could think of was, this person is a bully. Like they bully people and they disguise it as like social justice and stuff. Like they were getting people fired for making innocent mistakes and stuff like that. And it's just like, I don't like this person. I would never be their friend, but like, that's the situation at the time. And it was pure chaos and extremely, stressful. And then with all that happening, I'm still having to walk on eggshells to deal with the you know, made up invisible illnesses and the, you know, the crises, you know, every week or two. And it's just like, it's impossible to keep up with. And that's like, it's taken over my life essentially at this point. And I finally had enough, basically,
roommate or your girlfriend?
Both.
Okay.
But the sequence of events is I kind of stood up to my girlfriend first, because she had a thing where on Saturday night or Sunday, super early morning, you know, I think these things usually happen at like 3 a.m. Car window gets broken. Somebody broke into her car, you know, and it's, and so we have like, and that turns into one of her crises, except this one's real, but it's, she kind of just blows it completely out of proportion, because it's not, it sucks to have your window broken. It's going to cost money to fix, but it's not the end of the world. But the way she like that, but that's how she takes it, right? This is the end of the world. And so it's like she loses it over that. And then we have to go out and get the window fixed. And then of course she doesn't have the money to do it. So I'm going to have to pay for it. And we're driving around and I'm trying to search. She's having me look for a place to go to get it fixed. So I'm on my phone doing that. And I'm like, I can't find any place that's open. Like it's Sunday. I didn't even know this, but I guess glass repair shops just aren't open on Sunday here. I thought they'd be a 7 day a week business, but not, you know, in this city, apparently. And she got extremely upset with me at that. So it was basically like, you know, proof of my incompetence or my laziness or something, like, but it, you know, it's like, it's kind of like, well, of course you can't find any place in this, you know? And like, so she starts yelling at me and I actually, like, I just have to tell her to like pull over. Cause I already have anxiety when I'm riding in the car with, if you remember. So it's like, that's way too much. I just told her to pull over and I'm just like, it's Sunday and I can't find a place. Like, see if you can find one. And then of course she couldn't. And we go back home, but that's kind of fixed it into my mind. And it's like, I have to say something. Like I have to stand up for myself. Like, cause clearly up until that point, I hadn't done that at all for anything. And I kind of resolved, and I like approached her, and all I said was, you know, it's like, in the car this morning, like it's not okay to yell at me like that. And that's the only point I had to make. Like it's not okay to yell at me like that. And that turned into like probably one of the, like, or the biggest fight ever. But I wouldn't call it a fight because it was completely one way. It was her like shouting at me, like even louder than she shouted at me in the car. And it was just hours, 2 to 3 hours of blame shifting, you know, basically her just telling me how everything's my fault. And I never do anything for her. You know, it's like relationship's completely unbalanced. And like, it's as though she has to do everything. And I'm, you know, I'm basically in, you know, worthless, you know, and it's just hours of that. And
so at this point, you know, she's instilled fear in you. You feel obligated to do everything. And now you're feeling guilty even when you stand up for yourself. So right. I assume now that you're afraid to do anything because everything is blown right up in your face.
And I can't even present a simple concern because that's too much. Like I'm not allowed,
but you're still hooked. Like,
I mean, yeah. Oh, at this point it's very hard to describe. Like I would definitely say that it's like I definitely was trauma bonded at this point. So it's like, I know things are bad and this shouldn't be happening, but I don't, but I'm kind of stuck. Like, I couldn't end things if I wanted to because things are so chaotic and
I can't. You're an addict. You're an addict.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I'm an addict in that because even though I know things are awful, there are still some good things that happen. And, like, she definitely does the thing where after a night like that where she shouts me down until I'm in tears, but the next day she's, like, super nice, or, you know, the next little while she's super nice and it's like it was in the beginning. Yeah, she knows she took it too far. She takes it too far, and then so she's pulling it back and making it appear like this isn't how it's going to be, you know? And I'm just living one day at a time because I never know what's going to happen next. Like, between her and this new roommate and their whole dynamic, and, like, I can't plan ahead at all because it's just one thing after another and it's unpredictable. Yeah, and then so I had enough of her behavior, and then that blew up on me. But then, like, I have the roommate to deal with, and finally there was, like, a weekend where, like, she had filled the sink with her own dirty dishes or whatever. Like, and I guess she just didn't want to wash her own dishes, so she just made the claim that they were mine and I needed to deal with it. And I tried to, like, you know, stand my ground a bit. You know, at this point in time, I didn't understand the concept of boundaries. So I'm kind of like I'm finally trying to set boundaries, although I didn't understand that that's what I was doing. But I'm just trying to say, like, no, like, this isn't mine. You did this. This is your responsibility. You need to do it. And so that I enraged the roommate as well, and they blew up on me. And they, like, texting my phone constantly and saying incredibly mean things. And then also using that as weaponizing that with my ex-girlfriend and, you know, making me out to be this terrible, awful person to them, and they're text bombing them as well. And I just blocked their number. I was like, I've had enough. Like, I don't have to accept this kind of thing. So I just blocked their number, and I was like, I am not going to speak to this person again. Like, this isn't, you know, unacceptable. And so the roommate, just finally decided they were going to move out, and they did a few weeks later, I think. But it's just like, yeah, like, but it's like these first two times I try to, like, stand up for myself in a simple way, and it's a huge explosion both times. And the roommate moves out. This is really the beginning of act three. I didn't understand any of this kind of behavior at all, because I've never experienced this kind of stuff in my life up until this point. So it was extremely confusing to me, and I couldn't make any sense of it at all. And then what with, like, essentially being addicted to this relationship, like, I wasn't actually trying to solve the problem that much, really. And with the roommate leaving, I just, like, the first time when the roommates moved out, like, it was like the same thing. It's like, oh, this problem person is moving out, therefore things might get better. But it things became worse than the last time that happened. And, you know, she always has to present herself in the best light and make herself out to be, like, this great person. And so when other people are around, she has to put on that face, you know. So, but when there's nobody there, she doesn't have to do that because she doesn't care what I think. You know, like, at this point, she can treat me however she wants. I can't do anything about it. I can't say anything about it. Because it would just be, you know, turn into another, like, being shouted down and stuff. So this is when she started, like, claiming to need to work overtime. So she was like, she would always say 100 plus hours a week she needed to work to make ends. And it's more like 60, but, you know, she exaggerates everything. So 100 hour plus is, that's how she likes to exaggerate stuff. Actually, no, it probably was that. No, I haven't done the all the math on exactly how many hours a week she'd be gone, but she was gone all the time. She said she needed to work all this overtime to make ends meet and just to, so we could survive. But like I did our budget multiple times and our total income was fine. Like, even without either of us working any overtime, we were bringing in enough money that both of us, you know, independently could fulfill our mutual obligations as far as household expenses. So it's, we can each pay our half comfortably and have money left over. And so this whole concept of hers that she was forced into a position where she has to now work all this overtime made no sense to me. It was definitely optional. So I'm not going to but yeah, she started being gone. It kind of ramped up. So she'd be gone most of the day and come home and with only like a few hours before we'd go to bed. But then it kind of escalated to where she would only come home to sleep on weekdays. So it would only be like for 6 hours. So she'd only come home 6 or 7 hours a day just to sleep. And then she'd eat, wake up, get up, get out of bed, get dressed and leave.
Are you getting suspicious at this point?
Yeah, very. Yeah, definitely. Like everything from this point on that starts to happen. I know that I have my suspicions and I know what I think these kinds of things probably mean, but I don't have anything definitive, like nothing concrete to say she's definitely up to something, or I don't know what that something be. So I just keep giving her sort of the benefit of the doubt. But I was pretty certain she was lying about her working hours. You know, at the time I was pretty certain. I now know for a fact she was not working any overtime. But I was suspicious of almost everything at this point, but I just never had enough information to go on to move past just constantly forgiving and giving her the benefit of the doubt, I guess. But so she's gone all the time. She's only coming back on, she's only at home really on weekends, but even then she'd still leave for 8 to 10 hours to work more overtime. So she's home more on weekends, but essentially not really. And then she constantly, despite, you know, claiming to work all these hours, she's also having major financial issues. Like she's constantly overdrawing her account and going negative. And so I have no idea how it's even happening, because if she's working, I did the math and it's like, I would add up all the hours she would say she was working. And, you know, and the wage she said she was earning, all this, and like, should have been making so much money. It was ridiculous. It should have been impossible for her to run her accounting. I mean, I don't know what you could possibly spend that much money on, but she'd constantly be claiming to overrunning her account and going negative sometimes by $1,000 or more. And so I would have to fix that. And like she'd be unable to pay her share of rent, so I'd have to pay it. And she would, at the time, she was the one sending the rent checks to our landlords, and she actually bounced a rent check. And so I had to take control of that situation and pay the full amount of rent myself. And then I made myself the person who would send the checks, so I could be sure that when it happened, like a check won't bounce again. But it's like, but yeah, it's just, she's just never home and I'm constantly having to deal with these major problems. And then she still does the whole thing where there's basically like every pay cycle, there's a new crisis I have to solve. Usually by just PayPaling her money. And if I said no to that, then that would be a huge problem for me, you know. Hey, I think at this point we'd been together like 2 years, so yeah, she had full confidence she'd be able to do this stuff. So essentially what she does is she was doing is she would just spend her money on whatever she wants. You know, she wants to go to a concert, she'd buy concert tickets. She wants to, she wasn't working, so she was spending that money going out, binge drinking, and
just not with you.
Just not with me. And I would eventually find out there's much more than that, because during this whole period, like, she's essentially love bombing another guy. So a lot of that time spent doing that. I had no idea there was, like, of the cheating. I mean, I kind of had my suspicions based on things she would do, but I had no concrete proof or anything. And I didn't want to be that person who starts making
accusations.
Yeah.
And you did not want this in your mind. Are you thinking, I don't want this relationship to end? Like, you're still addicted to the drug aspect of it. Like, you're hooked to the love addict part of it. And,
definitely.
You know, now, you know, if you put up any sort of stink that is beyond your normal stink, it could be over.
Yeah. And this, she was definitely threatening to, she's threatened to end the relationship a couple times. But during that whole time, she's actually building the case to leave me. So she's, you know, she's making me out to, because I don't have contact with any of her friends at all, essentially. Like, I haven't even met her friend. And she has, like, this whole new set of friends at this point. Sort of stuff that's happened throughout this time is, like, all of our mutual friends were from the job together at, but by this point in our relationship, we both worked at different jobs. We had both gotten new jobs since then, separate jobs. And so the only mutual people you could call mutual friends who knew us both, like, they're out of the picture by now. So she's made an entirely new circle of friends. And I don't know any of them. I haven't met any of them. I might know some of their names, but that's it.
I bet they know a lot about you, and it's all terrible.
Right. She essentially had been building the case in people's minds, planting the seeds that I was abusive and manipulative person, and that she was, like, drowning in this relationship, needed to get out. Or I think a term she would use all the time is she's suffocating, stuff like that. And so she's really, like, it's like she knows people will eventually figure out that she's cheating, and she's planting the seed so that if people do find out about that, she has an excuse and it makes it okay.
Yeah, she's creating these flying monkeys that they have no idea that they are those yet, until eventually one day they fall out of love with them and they realize, oh, this person's a terrible person. Maybe Ethan's actually a pretty good guy. Who knows if they would even think that, but they're just probably happy that they would leave.
Right, exactly.
So how did you find out about everything, and, like, what led to the eventual downfall?
I found out about everything when she had accidentally left herself logged into Google on my personal computer. So I'm a big Google user, so the way I have my computer set up is once it starts up and you log into Windows, it launches Chrome, and Hangouts is set up as an app, so it popped up. But she had left herself logged in, so I just log into my computer after work one day, and I see her Hangouts conversation where I would expect mine to be. And so I saw her having conversations with multiple people. First thing I saw was the conversation she was having with a friend of hers that only online, but she was basically bragging about all the terrible things she'd been doing to me. Like bragging about, manipulating me and, but also, talking about in detail, a night she was, cheating on me and, like, doing all kinds of drugs with her secret boyfriend, essentially, who was she going to replace me with. And it completely, like, I didn't know how to process it at all. And, like, and there was a lot more than that. Like, there were the conversations she was having directly with the person that she was cheating on me with, and conversations with other people. And then I think she was, I'm pretty sure she was in relationships with not just me and the secret boyfriend, but with other people too. Cause she's also talking to someone about how so-and-so wanted to break up with her, but they were too afraid to. So it was like a third person she was in a serious relationship with. So she has like multiple people who she's in serious relationships with, and I'm just the one that she lives with. So this is like a tidal wave of information that essentially like confirmed all the suspicions I'd been having, but it was still impossible to process really. But it was indisputable proof, right?
And even with this undisputable proof, are you thinking of breaking up with her, or are you thinking, let's have a conversation about this?
I'm thinking I have to talk to her. Like, like the idea of breaking up with her did not pop into my, it wasn't the first thing that popped into my head. It was first like admitting to myself that I don't know what to do about this. And then the second thing was, I guess the only responsible thing to do is to talk to her about it. Even though I like definitely this long into the relationship, you know, almost 3 years into the relationship, I'm definitely like, I know it's like any attempt to talk to her about something not even close to the serious meet ends in disaster. And this is extremely serious. It's devastatingly serious. Like, so I have no clue what's going to happen, but it's the only thing I can think of to do. I have to have a conversation with her, and I try to confront her about it. And all I ask is, I come to her and I want to know what the status of our relationship was or is. And she's like, I've tried not to have this conversation with you or something like that. But then I just straight up asked, are you in a relationship with someone else right now? And all she said was no. And then I tried to ask it in a more tactful way. And I was just like, okay, well, are you planning on ending your relationship with me and starting one with someone else? And she said, no, she doesn't relationship. which is, you know, she's clearly lying to me because of what I've discovered. She doesn't know I know this stuff. But, and then that conversation still devolved into hours, you know, the typical hours long blame shifting. You know, everything's a disaster because of me and stuff. And, I was definitely like not in a mentally healthy state, like before I discovered all this stuff, because she'd actually also been like seriously, I didn't understand it at the time, she'd also been seriously gaslighting me up until this point as well. And trying to convince me that I was like suicidal and stuff. So I was before I discovered this, I was blaming myself for everything and trying to like fix myself, figure out like what's wrong with me, what do I got to fix, and how do I feel, how can I not feel terrible all the time? But I thought it was all like something I had to fix in myself. I guess because of the gaslighting, like I wasn't attributing things to her at all, or hardly at all. And then this on top of all that, like I was like in the darkest place of my life, really. Like, yeah. But at least discovering this, the one thing it did do was it was like proof that like the things I thought were true, and that at least a big chunk of my self-doubt wasn't warranted. Yeah, I guess. Because after the following day, after we had that, I tried to have the conversation with her, and she just turned it around on me for years, that's when I finally realized, like, I have to break up with her. And it has to be done. And so I, like, that discovery and knowing that I had been right about some things that's really bad, it's probably the only thing that gave me just enough courage to finally say, like, I have to exit this as soon as possible. Because, yeah, if I hadn't discovered that, I would have just kept on going for sure, mm-hmm. for however long. I mean, she was planning on leaving me like in a few months from that point. Like, she had an actual plan that in September of that year, so that was just like a few months after that or something, like, she had already made plans to completely discard me, and she wasn't going to tell me anything about it. She was just going to disappear and just leave me with all these problems to solve, and, you know, and take all my money in the meantime, in the interim. So I would have been left, you know, essentially like penniless with, you know, a house I can't afford. And like, that was her plan to do that. And of course she justified it all because, like, probably from the point of view of her friends, like, or it's definitely the point of view they have now. It's like, I gave her no choice because of how terrible I was, right? And so, obviously, if you're as terrible as she claimed I was, like, anybody's going to, yeah, you have to do that. You have no choice. You have to do that. So that's how she painted me to justify everything and make her plan okay in the eyes of her new friends and stuff.
So how does it end?
Well, geez. I mean, So the next day I decided to break up with her. And so that night, like, I come home and of course she's doing the miniature love bombing and she's being extremely nice and apologetic and, like, cooked dinner and everything. And, like, I just told her, I'm ending the relationship. Like, yeah, that was extremely difficult to do, but then I couldn't sleep for a week, and I was still, I was trying to be, despite how terrible the situation was and how angry I should have been, I wasn't. I was just like I was in that fog super deep, because I'm also still self-doubting to an extreme amount, because it's like, what if I got this wrong? What if somehow I'm misinterpreting it? And of course I'm not. I'd keep reminding myself how plain and indisputable, like, the evidence was. And I can't, like, even if I was misinterpreting it a lot, it was still proof of enough, right? And so going through tons of self-doubt, and I want the separation to be, you know, amenable, I guess. So I was going to stick around for another, like, month and a half and help with this transition. But I was like, I couldn't sleep for a week, and I was getting super sick, both my mental state and physically, because I'm not sleeping, and, like, I can't think straight. She was definitely taking advantage of that and just gaslighting me like crazy during that time. Like, really making sure that I believed that, or trying to make me believe that I was the person to blame and that I was abusive to her. She went with the story that I didn't know I was an abusive person, but I was. And that's how she wanted me to think of it. So she wanted me to think, like, she completely denied having cheated and everything. So she's going with the story that she never did anything wrong and that I was abusive, but I didn't realize it, so I should blame myself and we should move on or something. But she was definitely pinning everything on me, trying to make me believe that story. During this time, since I'm not sleeping at all, I actually started to research, like, what this was and what had happened. And that's when I first started to actually understand what things like gaslighting was, and all, you know, and emotional manipulation. And so I'm putting it all together. I'm like, yep, this is basically what I thought was going on, but didn't know definitively. And so never did anything about it. And so I was learning about all that. And then I realized what she was doing, to me at that point. And I realized, like, I can't stay here, you know, month and a half. I can't do that. Like, it's probably, you know, it may even be dangerous to do that. So I changed my plans, and I left. I had someone come and get me. I loaded the car full of as much of my personal items as I could and left with them and moved two states away. So that's how it ended.
So you just, like, took off completely because that's the best thing you could do. Have you spoken to her since?
Yeah, I stayed in contact with her for a few months after that. Like, and she wanted me to believe that I was the problem. So she was being nice, but also, like, what had happened was also off limits to discuss, essentially. Kind of like, if I ever try to talk to her about anything, because, you know,
she was still trying to control everything.
So she's telling people that I was abusive, but of course I don't have contact with those people, so I don't even know. But she's trying to maintain a relationship with me, because I guess that's just what she does. Like, she has multiple relationships going at all time. And there's a primary one, the person whoever she lives with at the time, but she always has multiple relationships going at all times. And she was trying to maintain that with me. I was just going to be one of those long distance relationships for her to milk for, to continue to use as an ATM. Mm-hmm. Because at some point I'm going to be reestablished and I'll have money again, and you can fake, she can continue the con, you know? So
how are you doing now?
A ton better. Like, so, yeah, cause
like, how cause did you get, this... you're out of your fog now, you're two states away. So once you're out of the fog, are you feeling shame and guilt over everything? And if you were or are, how did you get, around or through that?
It was a mix. So yeah, I was in the still in the fog, still feeling shame and guilt. But at the same time, I was researching this kind of thing as much as I possibly could. So I was, it's such a strange thing. Cause it's like, I had a full understanding that, you know, essentially, like, she had conned and used me and done all these things, manipulated me and just completely abused me. I like it. And I could understand that and see it, but then I still had that lingering sort of addiction going on, and I still somehow wanted to, like, go back to the way it was type thing. So I was wrestling with that a lot. But during that time, I was also reestablished in contact with who our mutual friends were when we worked together. And I started to learn through them that, you know, I wasn't crazy. Like, she really, she really does lie about everything, and she does it to everyone. So when I'm getting back in touch with people, like, you know, basically I just started learning about how she lied to them. And she has like a different stories about herself that she tells everyone. And so it's very validating and confirming. It's just like, okay, I'm not wrong about this. Like, she is what I think she is, and other people confirm it. And, you know, cause she did all kinds of incredibly terrible things that I had and no idea about. Like, I thought that she had left that job for a new one just for simple reasons. Like, she was unhappy and she had kind of like a conflict with boss. So she found a, you know, a newer, better job. But what really happened is she was, like, making false sexual harassment claims against her boss and others. And so she had created, like, basically she was going to be fired, but She didn't tell me that. I didn't know what was happening at all. But she had created a massive mess at that job and had to quit before they fired her. But yeah, like she manipulates and cons everyone. Mm-hmm. Even just people on Facebook. Like she's part of these, you know, closed Facebook groups. And she was part of a group called like Mommy Atheists or something similar to that. She literally cons those people. She manipulates them emotionally to give her money and gifts and things.
Yeah, she's a real con artist, this person.
Yeah, she does this to literally everyone she interacts
with. It's just one giant path of destruction. Like, and you're done, keeps on going and moving and going and moving and going.
And she's a nomad. She's constantly generating new circles of friends, whether in real life or online. And so she's always prepared to abandon an old one and replace them with a new one.
And all the whole entire time, she knows when the old one is going to be leaving. She's already developing the new one. And then when the other person either leaves or she's just done with all of the probably arguing, you know, then she'll leave herself once she's got solid footing somewhere else. Most of the time, it probably occurs when they get a new job. Because all of a sudden you have a brand new set of friends. They have no idea who she is. And she just keeps on moving and moving and moving. And then eventually that job, she'll have to leave there. He gets a new job. And it's just a continuous cycle for her. And everyone else is in the aftermath. And you have to rebuild your life.
Right. And she doesn't hesitate to, I mean, essentially she's a pathological liar. Although...
She knows what she's doing. She just doesn't care.
Yep, she definitely doesn't care because she'll make up ridiculous stories. Like I think the last thing I heard about me, because I went no contact with her almost 3 months ago now. But since then, like she definitely has been smearing the heck out of me, or at least was for a while. And like the last thing I heard about that was like she was saying that I was in love with someone else, and but that person was trying to drive me to suicide and save that or something. So she's like making up these bizarre stories where she's both a victim and compassionate hero, and I was both. You know, it's these bizarre, completely made up stories. It's like to smear me, she's also smearing others, painting this person who, you know, as someone who's driving people to suicide. Like, who, and this person, I had no relationship at all with that person. I wasn't really even friends with them hardly at all. But it's just like, yeah, she doesn't care who she hurts or what she does, as long as it serves her needs in one fashion or another.
So before we end the show, for everyone out there, what is the biggest thing or takeaway that you would want other people to learn from what happened to you?
I mean, I think like the biggest lesson I've learned from this whole thing is like, you don't want to let yourself get too isolated. Like you always want to have people you can talk to and talk to about anything that's making you feel uncomfortable. Cause I think if I did that, if I had safe people to talk to and vent my concerns to, they could have helped me understand what was happening much sooner. And I could have like saved myself a lot of trouble.
So, Ethan, thank you for being on the show.
And this was my episode with Ethan, and hopefully you made it all the way through and fought through some of the sound issues and the changes of sound. And I just thank you for listening to it, and a big thank you again to Ethan, especially since it's been probably like 2.5 years since you recorded this. So that's a lot of patience for your episode to eventually make it out to the main public. So a really big thank you to everyone. And I think, you know, 2 years ago to today, the show has changed so much in how I've done the show. This was originally done in like a three-act structure. There was a period of time where I was doing like these three-act structures. I'm actually now thinking now that this might not even been early 2020. This might have been 2019. Like, this is a really old episode. This was like really, really early on, this episode. So the whole structure has changed and how I did things, because I remember when I was doing this three-act structure, people would send me emails saying, like, please do not do the three-act structure. So I went back to doing it how we normally do it, and things kind of evolved, and the mandate of the show changed over time. So kind of going back and listening to this, you know, it really takes me back to the infancy of everything and really not knowing what I was doing and just kind of winging it and learning about abuse and narcissistic abuse and personality disorders and domestic violence and coercive control and everything under the sun. And if I could go back with this episode and do some changes of how I was asking questions, I even could tell how fast I was going, and there was no thinking on my part. It was like just what was ever in my head I would say. And it's changed a lot, where I think a lot more and I process things a lot more while I do the podcast. And I don't know, for me, it was interesting to listen to and to re-edit again. So thank you to everyone who went through that and now listening to me do this whole entire spiel. So anyway, we're always looking for more people to be guests on our show. No episode is too small or too large or whatever that means, but I'm just rambling. So if you want to be a guest, please do go to narcissistapocalypse.com. Top of the page, there's a button that says guest form. When you click on that button, it takes you to our guest form page. Please read all the instructions. Send us an email at narcissistapocalypse@gmail.com or fill out our guest form submission page and press submit. And as well, if you need support, please join our support group also at narcissistapocalypse.com. You click on the support group button, and that takes you to our safe social network, where we have bonus episodes like this, even though this one's now on the main page, the main show. And we have ad-free episodes, we have forum boards, and we have Zoom meetings every Wednesday night and Saturday night and every other Thursday afternoon. And if you want even more support, please do go to domesticshelters.org. They're a friend of our show. And there you can find shelters, you can find resources, free articles. It's a great place. It's a wonderful organization. So it's at domesticshelters.org. And I think that is it for now. Oh, if you just really want to support the show, just join our support group. It helps us out a lot. So that is that. And now, from myself and Ethan, if you still listen to the show, I hope you do. Actually, I hope you don't, because I want you to move on from our show. So hopefully Ethan is doing well. I thank him for helping everyone. And that's it. From myself and Ethan, we hope you have a good night.